Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I'm Josh and I'm joined by Hugo.
Hello.
And we're going to talk today about democratic peace theory.
Yeah, this is a topic that is very interesting for me personally, and I hope I can make it interesting for other people as well, because this is one of the kind of big questions in international relations. I mean, there's a lot of big questions, but this is one of them because it concerns wars, it concerns the kind of world peace and aspirations towards the world peace. And so this is kind of at the center of that, because what democratic peace theory is saying that democracies do not wage wars against each other. And that's the kind of proposition that's been somewhat accepted, somewhat not. And I'm going to kind of get deeper into what it is and how it's been supported and how it's been opposed. Because I personally haven't made up my mind completely about it, but I've got my leanings, and so this is going to be maybe less forceful than some of the other opinions of mine that I've had on this show. And so I want to kind of make this into a couple of sections. The first section is I'm just going to talk a little bit about what the democratic peace theory is, of the detailed definition maybe, and then we'll look at a case for it, so in defense of that theory, and then we'll look at one case against it. I think we needs to be said that there's many cases for it and many cases against it, and for the case against it, I've selected the one that I think is the most persuasive. And in the case for it, I've selected the one that I think is kind of the most prevalent one and the one that's most widely believed. And so I think that's will kind of make sense to do it like that. And then at the end, we'll kind of have a discussion over kind of what it means if the criticism is true and accurate. So that's what I hope to do. So first, what is democratic peace theory, right? And so just kind of from Wikipedia, the first paragraph that you can find there is that most studies have found some form of democratic peace that exists, and although neither methodological disputes nor doubtful cases are entirely resolved. And so they're saying, well, this is something that has been kind of observed in practice, but it's contentious as to why or how or what exactly is going on. And so That's something that I need to say up front as well, is that there are some data, there is some kind of correlation that is there, and what people are trying to explain is whether that's kind of a real effect, or what's the effect due to, or whether it's explainable by something else, things like that, right? Mm-hmm. And so I don't think anyone is disputing kind of the data in and of itself, even though the ways that the data is sometimes gathered and defined is a bit unclear as well. And
this one just to be clear, the actual data about democratic peace theory is that concerning things like how the likelihood of a democratic state declaring war on another
yep.
state as compared to perhaps some other state.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to have some more quotes later that kind of lay out exactly, especially in the case for the theory, like what the claim is, how strong it actually is, or how it isn't. So first, like the two things that you need to define before you start making that claim is you need to define what war or peace is, and you need to define democracy, right? And you find that when defining war, that's easier because people kind of generally get the idea, and it's not that contentious. You can debate whether a war starts at 1,000 casualties per year, or whether it starts lower or higher, or whether it involves like non-military disputes that are still kind of, or military disputes where no one died or something like that, right? So there are marginal differences and arguments like that, but it's not really that central, because most people agree, yeah, we know what a war is, like you can tell. And so that's not the contentious point. What is the contentious point is democracy, right? Because it's kind of difficult to define whether something is democratic or not, and especially when you need to when something is a bit murky and you need to decide whether that state is democratic or whether it's not democratic, because then you're going to take the data from that state, what it does, and you're either going to include or exclude it from your data mm-hmm. set. So that is a problem, right? And so that has been quite contentious. So I'm going to give a couple of examples of researchers who've done that and tried to define democracy for these purposes, right? So Melvin Small and David Singer say that it means that in that state there are elections with free oppositions, that there are extensive voting rights, and there is a parliament that is kind of on par with concerning constitutional power with the executive. And so that's their definitions. Then Michael Doyle has his own definition, which is what a liberal regime is, because he kind of uses it interchangeably, those two terms, liberal and democratic. And so he means kind of that liberal democratic regime, like what is sometimes like, it's sometimes called that. And so he operates with that. And what he means is a market economy, internal sovereignty, that citizens have, you know, judicial rights, and that it has a representative government and extensive voting rights. So that's kind of his categories that he needs to include for something to be a democracy. And then Rudolf Rummel says, quote, by democracy is meant liberal democracy, where those who hold power are elected in competitive elections with a secret ballot and wide franchise, loosely understood as including at least two-thirds of adult males, where there is freedom of speech, religion, and organization, and a constitutional framework of law to which the government is subordinate and that guarantees equal rights. So you can see that this one in particular is very extensive. You know, mm-hmm. It's a very strict definition of what is included among democracies, and there's not too much of a wiggle room, you know, when you've not fulfilled a couple of these, you're already classified as something else.
I certainly prefer the last two definitions, because the first one, parliament on par with the executive, mm-hmm. that would make the UK not a democracy.
At least on par. That's something I need to clarify. Okay. So either on par, so it's equally mm-hmm. as powerful, or is more powerful. So with the UK, the parliament is arguably more powerful than the executive, and
I wouldn't necessarily say that. I'd say that the executive would be more powerful than the parliament, because parliament also is dominated by the executive's party, isn't it? Because the executive is made up by the dominant party in parliament.
Yeah, but it's always like that. Like mm-hmm. that's kind of the fiction of, like, of course I'm not a fan of democracy, so like I'm gonna make it seem uncharitable, but that's kind of the fiction behind states, is that executive and legislative are different things, and that mm-hmm. that they don't cooperate, or they are actually against each other or something like that. I don't believe that, but that's what democratic theorists mm-hmm. kind of have in mind, like that. And so in the UK, of course, unwritten constitution, mm-hmm. you have the supremacy of the parliament, right? That's the kind of law of the land. And of course, that doesn't mean that the executive has no power. It doesn't mean that the parliament can do anything it wants in practice. It just means that it kind of has the upper hand, I guess. And so that would fulfill that.
Mm-hmm. I think the definition they use holds a bit more in places like the US, mm-hmm. where they've got a greater separation of powers, but where the executive is derived from parliament here in the UK, it kind of is a weird distinction, because, you know, they're inextricably intertwined with one another, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, but I would say that this definition kind of encompasses all of it, and mm-hmm. so like it wouldn't say that the UK is not a democracy. It would say no, like that's of course it fulfills that.
Sure.
So you shouldn't take that too restrictively. That's what I'm trying to say, I think. Yeah. So people in general disagree about how to define it properly, and of course that then leads to the fact that you can't really say, well, there have been this many wars between democracies and non-democracies, and then between democracies and democracies, because you don't know really what counts as democracy and non-democracy. And whenever a scholar studies it, they include whatever they feel like is appropriate, and whatever they feel like they make sense from their point of view, and then it makes for a different data set than the other ones. And so there is no kind of agreed upon definition of where the cutoff point is, or what counts mm-hmm. or what doesn't count. So that's one of the problems.
Yeah, I can certainly see who is assessing will clearly affect the outcome and the results. And also, you could even go so far as to say the point in time in which they assess influences it as well. Like you can mm-hmm. say, okay, well, Everyone accepts that the US is a democracy, but then depending on who you ask, they might say, well, actually, There are reasons why we doubt that, but that's a topic for a different time.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.